This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
We must guard against the military-industrial complex.
UFOs, paranormal phenomena, and deep analysis of current world events from somewhere in the desert between Area 51 and Roswell, blasting across the planet, the Manticore Network proudly presents Fairy Tales, because the truth will set you free.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The power they took from the people will return to the people.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Shall I tell you what I find beautiful about you? You are at your very best when things are worse.
Sooner or later, though, you always have to wake up.
Be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas at veritasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fambergus, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home. I want to thank you, Veritas member, for making Veritas possible. Please subscribe at veritasradio.com to listen to both segments of tonight's interview and all of our material. I've named tonight's show Looking Over the Cliff, The Return of Cliff High. I know you've been asking to have Cliff High back, and I'm glad we finally got it done. Buckle up and enjoy tonight's ride. Cliff High will be with us shortly. And the weather is already changing, so don't get caught without it. Buy MMS directly from us, a source you can't trust. It's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it, and it's so inexpensive. And if you want to download all of our shows, but you have a slow internet connection, purchase our futuristic metal-cased USB drives containing seasons 1, 2, or 3, and bonus material. Visit the Veritas store for more information. And to get in touch with us for member support, media inquiries, you want to be a guest, or are a whistleblower, there's a link for you by clicking on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. And here's what I suggest when you listen to tonight's interview. Find a quiet place, grab some coffee, tea, or some pumpkin pie, which is what I just ate a minute ago, and also go to halfpasthuman.com and buy Cliff's latest report. Tonight, we'll be dissecting the latest report, and if you have it handy, it will help you. That and the fact that when Cliff is on this program, my neurons explode at a much faster pace, and I have to speak and move things along really fast. Why? Because I want to fit in as much information as possible. And with that out of the way, directly from the Pacific Northwest, I would like to welcome Cliff High back to Veritas. Hello, Cliff, and welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing very fine, and coincidentally, I have a pumpkin spice chai at the moment.
Well,
so, a rhino moment there where we've got a synchronicity going.
Excellent. Well, before we start, I saw on your website that before we start with the material dissected, from your report, you were mentioning that you wanted to discuss the incredible, let me quote, We will be discussing the incredible level of confusion that has affected the U.S. election vote counting process to the point that the whole game is exposed and at a risk of implosion. Oops, I mean will have. Tell us more.
The data sets in the... Okay, now, over this past couple of years, we've been having to deal with a flood of immediacy data. The problem with immediacy data, from my viewpoint, is that it goes stale really quick, in the sense that it might have a 3 to 4 hour heads up on something that will hit mainstream news, or it might go out 3 weeks, but it starts really being effective around 3 days. So I can barely write about it before it becomes mainstream news. And usually immediacy data in that sense is a lot more celebrity oriented, long-term impact, low duration, but very high intensity, high emotional impact, kind of material. However, I've kept the servers running, and I keep looking at the immediacy data flow because I've been interested, because the confusion language has continued to build as we've gone through the election season. Now, bear in mind, I pay absolutely no attention to any of the election stuff on TV. I don't watch TV. What I'm running off of is the emotional state that's coming out of the immediacy data that's still being gathered. And so I'm getting reports today that if I get off my butt and go and analyze them later tonight, might be stale by, say, Monday. They may have some impact that might stretch out into the third week. But the level of emotional intensity around the election is such that a lot of this stuff goes stale real quick. However, the majority of the data coming in is still continuing to go to the idea that confusion will reign in or during the elections, after the elections, and throughout the process of it, such that the process itself becomes suspect. So there's been a slight change in the language there to where the shift as we go forward into November. I don't know if I can say a date, but I would pick, say, around the 9th through the 12th, something like that. The anxiety over the election results will shift from anxiety over the results to anxiety over the integrity of the process at a national level, or perhaps even international.
Now, did you see that Texas is vowing to arrest UN election observers?
No, I had not. See, I've been out in the dome all day. I haven't got a clue, dude.
Yeah, yeah. And this wasn't part of my question, but since you're talking about the elections, who does the webbot see as the winner, with or without election fraud? Who will lead the US of A?
Who has been selected by the powers that be is Romney. Okay, all of the data sets within the language around the CFR and its Tavistock owners in London, all of the language coming out at a subtle level from the city in London, and a lot of the language that's coming out of Wall Street has a long-term duration value in it that's about 4 to 5 times greater than the same sources for language for Obama. So based on that, I say the powers that be are doing things now to prepare for a Romney rulership. But that is my only guide, is that particular metric. So let's be real clear about that.
Now, Israel wants Romney to win. Is that why he's going to win?
I don't think actually, there's the problem. According to the data I've got, there is no winner. And this is part of the issue. It's not going to be a clear-cut process. It's not going to be much of anything until there's some level of abdication. The level of abdication language seems to favor Obama abdicating the process. And at the same time, you know, not abdicating, but abandoning the continuation of the process, because the process itself is becoming exposed, and somebody probably tells him, you know, you don't want to push on this anymore. So it's going to be sort of like a repeat of, Bush 1 or Bush 2 there.
In 2000. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Let's start now dissecting the report. Let's start with solar looniness. And right off the bat, just to set the foundation, within the Meta Arts opening paragraphs, the report suggests, as it always has, a significant correlation between human actions and solar activity. With the sun's activity peaking during this upcoming transformative time, one would expect amazing events bursting from humanity and all of nature, to be honest. However, humanity are no longer truly natural species, meaning that they are not completely tied to the natural ecosystem at large, based off of seasons, migration patterns, or patterns of our prey. Instead, we've truly manipulated and augmented our natural lives to live in very unnatural patterns, from an organism's all the way up to the ecosystem's point of view, and no longer fit within the harmony of the complex system of the planet. Examples of this are found in the heavily toxic substances we pollute our minds and bodies with, whether it is mass media or mass inoculations, and psychotropic and psychological inhibitors, including high fructose corn syrup, to name one destructive ingredient that I've covered extensively here. It does not take much to show how humanity is no longer completely governed by natural forces, especially the anomalous forces like rare occurrences of increased solar activity. It can be argued that humanity no longer have a true baseline or standard in behaviors anymore. My question, with all of these impulses into the modern human state, will these solar events and subsequent reactions by humanity actually produce events that the bots will pick up from above the noise, that is the current chaotic nature of human existence right now? And how do the bots define solar looniness in an age of an undefined human?
It's necessary to examine the definition before we get into how we pick it up, because the definitions have to be described first. As we discovered when we missed 9/11 as a terrorist, quote, terrorist act, because we didn't have the word terrorism defined. Mm-hmm. And instead we had military accident. Okay, so the definition for the solar lunius is a full moon effect that runs during the day that increases with the intensity of the solar output. And by the full moon effect, I mean that which we would ascribe to the word lunatic, someone who's been affected by the moon, whose mind is not functioning in a normal fashion. The way in which we pick it up is actually rather straightforward, because a lot of the impact is leaked out from the minds that are suffering the impact, even though they are unaware that they are thus suffering it. As an instance, we can say that discussions of continuing dehydration are on the rise. You may see it's a trivial little discussion. You may go to a forum and someone says, "Boy, you know, got a dry mouth all the time. My skin's dry. My fingernails are dry. My hair's dry. My environment is dry. I sense that my environment is dry." They keep repeating the dry word relative to their body parts. And what they're actually experiencing is a twofold, or could be a twofold effect. We know that there is an actual manipulation on the part of the powers that be to induce a specific level at about 6% of dehydration in the human species. The reason they want to do this is because it is the hydrogen molecule that we get from water that carries thought. And they wish to induce a lower level of thought, and they think that about 6% is the threshold. I've deduced that from some stuff coming out of Tavistock. But they cause us to be dehydrated by all of the chemicals that they put into the food that they feed the sheeple. So if you're eating mass produced foods, you're being mind controlled not merely by the salt, which you think is there to induce you to be thirsty to want that drink. No, it's really there because that drink that you're buying will never, ever satisfy that thirst, and they're going to keep you at a low level of dehydration, which actually dumbs you down because you don't have enough plentiful hydrogen atoms to cause your or to allow your brain to float thoughts the way that it needs to. So now that's the unnatural, unnatural approach to the dehydration that we're seeing now. But there's also in the background a component to it that we've been experiencing on the rise in our data since way back in the late 90s. And this relates to the solar-induced looniness, which at its core has basically the same cause, which is the reduction of the hydrogen atoms and ions available to your system that you use for thought. But in this case, the solar lunius has a bit of a wrinkle in it, because it'll throw in the odd little high-energy particle, the unattached electron, some gamma rays zinging through at the same time. And so it's not merely a dumbing down. It's an inability to think at an appropriate level, and the consideration of inappropriate thoughts, the way the Hopi or the Indians might say. So as an instance here, the local Native American tribes have this at the core of the tribal, not religion, but interaction among people. What makes the tribe work successfully is this idea that all humans are responsible for the thoughts that they consider. And so they would consider, that is to say, the local indigenous population would consider solar lunias to be defined by considering thoughts that you might not normally entertain. And that is a really good definition. Now, we pick that up separate from the dehydration effect by additional words that are associated with the dryness that relate to mental state. Makes sense?
It does. And it's interesting you're saying this because I drink a lot of water. And when I go to a restaurant, I drink a lot of water. But lately, I've been going to a restaurant and maybe even having 9 glasses of water and I'm still thirsty. And for the first time in my life, I have a bottle of eye lubricant in every room where I am because I cannot stand the dryness in my eyes that I've never experienced before.
And see, now that is likely the effect that you're getting from the sun, okay? Because you probably are much more cognizant of the food you eat in the nature of your business, but also in the nature of the radio business and what you've been exposed to. So, but everybody's experiencing this. It'll also affect your sleep. So you'll find that you may get to the point where you're not sleeping as well, and you find yourself in that 4 or 5 hour stage where you wake up, you're awake for an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and then you go back to sleep for an hour and a half. And this becomes increasingly frequent, and it's going to become increasingly frequent as we go along. It does not appear to be affecting all genetic types. Speaking of water, I'm going to have some here. The thing about the water is to bear in mind that now we're also in the situation where the level of high-intensity energies of all kinds, the X-rays, the free electrons, other forms of radical particles that are coming off of the sun, making it through our atmosphere because we have all of these holes in there, is going to affect us such that water alone is not your only physical impact that you're going to start feeling. And so the looniness is forecast because the next level up from the water issue within the body is the hormonal issue within the body, and the hormonal issues control your emotions. And once your emotions get out of whack, that's when we start seeing the looniness.
And now we get into the powers that be entity and the elections. The data set strings together terms to describe the body politic of the United States as conundrum, separation, distress and disruption, endless arguing, prostitution of position, negotiations over slaves, and how the reaction to the election snafu, mired in mud, would suggest decisions leading to upheaval and what appears to be a suggestion of incremental yet drastic systematic changes. Is the model set suggesting finally a change to the extremely antiquated electoral system due to a replay of the 2000 election vote counting gaffe?
No. It's not suggesting that there's going to be any attempt to reform the electoral process. It's not suggesting that there's going to be a response in that way. So rather, it's not forecasting it. There may well be that. If so, I wasn't paying any attention to it because that would have fallen under a different part of the powers that be entity. Rather, what it's suggesting is that from our viewpoint, that is to say, non-powers that be, non-minion class people, we will be looking at a presentation that will come through the mainstream media that will present that picture as defined by those words of conundrum, confusion, negotiation. Were the slaves, by the way, being negotiated over? There will probably be some level of backroom negotiations over electoral processes and so on. And it's likely that the process itself will be so exposed that as corrupt that many people will then say to themselves, basically, why bother? Make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it was a two-pronged question. The second part, or is it the model space suggesting larger changes to the governance of the U.S. body politic in relation to the ever-encroaching one-world government that the powers that be are arguably in the last stages of implementing with the fall of non-Rothschild banking countries like Libya, Iran, Syria, North Korea, Cuba, etc.?
It's not suggesting that. It's suggesting, let's be real clear because we're linguists here. The first part of your question goes to whether or not there will be a change in state of the government, not necessarily success, right? Yes, there will be a change in state. Will it be successful from their viewpoint? No.
Okay. And this next portion, Populus US of A. The model space invokes a transformation threshold and tension to release relationship. We've noted through the years that Americans and many Westerners are quite cushy in their lives, even lives of apparent desperation, and have all but allowed any governmental force to walk all over their liberties to preserve comfort and apparent safety. However, the events of 2011 in North Africa and the Middle East have given the populace a very dramatic revolutionary precedent, despite how the powers that be have tried to spin the stories of peoples throwing off their yokes of oppression, whether triggered or influenced by the powers that be or organically derived. The data suggests the U.S. of A population passing through a social transformation barrier at the end of this year. Therefore, is it safe to say that the data suggests the U.S. of A populace will finally become willingly unseated from the couch of complacency?
I don't know about willingly. They will certainly become unseated. In fact, I think we would actually have to say most of them will be both unwilling and unwitting. So in that sense... No, it's not as you're describing as the intent, if I'm correct in understanding, as the intent of the question. It will not be a generalized, emotionally driven uprising of the sheeple populace here in North America in that sense. There will be a general unseating of the comfort zone and in fact a disappearance, if you will, of the ability to maintain the illusion that we've had as a country for perhaps the last 20 plus years. It is the removal of this illusion and the examination of the underlying reality in its more bitter form that will dominate 2013. The reaction from the population will be driven by that, not by any sense of rah, 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 let's restore the Constitution and kick the bums out. Yeah, there will be a lot of that rhetoric, but that's not the underlying driving emotional impetus from what we can tell in our language.
And at this point in the report reads of an interpretation now riddled with bracketed data, terms, and little filler in between. We've seen this before in previous reports where certain parts of the report appear to write themselves, and you've suggested strong data correlation and significantly connected data terms. Does this dense section of the report, modeling the Pop US of A meme, suggest a very strong confidence level in these events coming to pass surrounding the U.S. elections and the new year?
Yes. Yeah, there's a very high level of confidence because the meme within the mini memes, within that language, was expressed repeatedly within the immediacy data, the shorter-term data, and the longer-term data, and the growth in those sets was consistent and strong, so the confidence level is.
And the report suggests an organized multi-generational resistance to the powers that be's decision and actions during this time. One of the more descriptive paragraphs ends with a comment about, no more details will be forthcoming from here on for obvious reasons of future security. Is that for the security of the soon-to-be leaders of this uprising?
That as well as for those people that are close to me. I've got to be very cognizant of the way in which retribution falls on individuals like myself.
Okay.
But yes, I would not say anything. Let's stop for a moment, okay? Because we've seen one of the early examples of this occur. And we've seen it in a situation where we can safely discuss it because we're so ignorant of the details of it that you and I could not betray anything of any importance to the bad guys. And this is the something that you may be aware of, which is the Generation Identitaire in France. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of this?
A bit. I think you're referring to the native Franks that want to take the country back. But refresh our memory.
Okay, it is the generation of native Franks, native Frank people, the French, the Gauls, descendant from the Gauls, the Picts, and so on, that have traditionally inhabited that area, that have been beaten down by the powers that be, overhyping immigration from Northern Africa and the Middle East, to the point where there was a social disruption in France over the last, oh, say, 35 or 40 years as a result of the immigration policies, ever since the fall of the Algerian colony. In the 60s, but and the transfer of the old franc for the new franc, which caused these transformations within the society. However, since that period of time, immigration has created a situation where the ordinary French citizen feels unsafe in their own country because of the overwhelming gang activity of the immigrants, who are all insular and actively anti, not anti-nationalist, but anti native French. And so what has happened is there's now been this backlash, and it is a backlash in an organized fashion, predictable, probably desired to a certain extent by the powers that be, but I don't know if they wanted this particular example of it to occur. But it is an example of a native-born French return us all to our future as the owners of France, no more immigration. We're going to be tight about this. If you break our laws, you get kicked out. You know, we're a non-Muslim country, so we're not going to follow Muslim laws. We're a non-African country, so we're not going to allow you to have female genital mutilation as part of your rituals, this kind of thing. If you want to do that, you have to leave. And so they're basically standing up for a pre-globalist viewpoint of themselves within their traditional lands. Now, this form of revolutionary fervor will arise within the structural degradation of the United States, and we needn't discuss any of the details because we might be close enough to, you know, cause people problems. But over in France, we wouldn't know anybody that we could discuss in any meaningful fashion that would cause them issues. Nonetheless, though, you'll see this generational movement. It is going to be worse than a brush fire. We won't apply those words because within our data, it goes to conflagration and forest fire and this sort of thing on a planet-wide scale. Now, unfortunately, we also see a lot of that language about the actual forest burning due to the upcoming solar effects. But and we frequently see that where, for instance, we'll see flood language relative to emotional things that are going to affect humanity, just as we're also having floods occur in reality.
And speaking of France, I think, as you said, after Algeria and some of the colonies, but also because France had a very low birth rate and they needed to bring the influx of immigrants. However, that's backfiring because they are now becoming the majority. The same thing's going to probably happen in Sweden, don't you think?
Okay, now we've got to be real careful about this. I would agree with you if we could trust those numbers. I'm now saying that to myself that, wait a second, the supposition that I had that the government numbers as to the level of birth rate in France from the 60s is my level of confidence in that is zero. I have no confidence that they weren't lying and using it as an excuse for their immigration. Because there is no corresponding reduction. They're actually saying that there is indeed this low birth rate among non-immigrant Swedes. But if you look at the hospital data, there is no indication whatsoever that there's been a drop in hospital visits for maternity cases from the baseline before the immigration. It has not, and in fact, it has grown in lockstep with the immigration. So in other words, the immigrant coming in, the immigrant community has not filled in a gap, so to speak, in the maternity usage over the maternity ward usage over there. In fact, it's simply grown in lockstep direct proportion. If you increase the population by 7% in general, you get a 7% increase of use of the maternity wards as opposed to any kind of a deviation. So there's a lot of indications that, as well as a number of blood plasma units used and all sorts of things to suggest that these numbers are suspect. And that may indeed be nothing more than their excuse. I happen to know that that was the excuse that they were using for the in the 50s and 60s. There was an idea that they would sell vast numbers of Mexican immigration into California and the Southwest as and the language they used was that these were importing the generation to care for us in our old age. And if you go back in history, you'll see that they ran a series of They, the powers that be, ran a series of efforts in national magazines, things like Harper's and this sort of thing, with specific California focus, trying to get us to all accept the idea that an aging populace wasn't going to be able to breed itself enough replacement in order to take care of itself. Therefore, we had to have the immigration occur. And that was what created the initial waves that ultimately Reagan did the amnesty on. And it was at that point that the system started breaking down relative to the lies they could tell. But we saw, again, they shifted their focus off of North America at around the period of time of Reagan into a serious way into immigration into Europe. So it's part of a pattern.
So you think that the governments are cooking the numbers for that reason?
Correct. Okay. It's just as one as their continuous lies. Basically, anymore, if a politician is speaking, they're lying. If a government official is speaking, they're lying. I used to work for government. I worked as a computer programmer. I worked as a manager of computer services. I did coding for government. I worked as a correction officer for government. I did all kinds of stuff for local government. In all of those cases, at many times, especially in the management position, I was required to produce numbers to justify and validate our existence as units there in terms of the guys who were doing the work, how many employees that might be in our section and so on. And so frequently, and in fact, as part of the process, we were told to lie. Oh, no, they would say, you must spend this money this year or you won't get it next year. Never mind that we had no need for the money this year, right? And frequently I would argue with people because I'm parsimonious. I hate wasting money. And so when I was a technical consultant in a high level to a state agency here, one of my last gigs for government, I would argue against the spending of money for large monitors for network admins and special routers and stuff they thought they needed because their justifications were bogus. And under the circumstances, it is an inbuilt level of corruption within the system at all levels, and it's not just IT. It's in every section relative to the idea of purchasing. Now, those cooking of the numbers go all the way through the system. So when I worked for Habitat and Fisheries up here, and Fisheries and Wildlife and all the various permutations of the Department of Natural Resources and its adjunct Department of Ecology, in many cases, you would find yourself as a member of government having to come up with numbers and project numbers for situations that were basically totally unknowable against a background of numbers that you were told were good, but you had no real reason to suspect were anything other than the same kind of bogus numbers you were using. So, and as examples, they would say in the salmon, in the 70s and 80s here, there was a big effort to save the salmon, which led to hiring all these biologists and everything. And you know, our salmon industry has not been saved. The huge expenditure that we've had through five decades now to try and save a natural species against what turns out to be the evolution of the planet ended in failure. And it was from a governmental viewpoint, a series of, I don't know if it was even well-meaning, but a series of decisions that were piled upon a corrupt system that led us to have this huge industry going towards the saving of the salmon. And it's a waste. It's not working. And it's altered our lives around here as humans and prevented us from doing other things. And in fact, they're trying to do things like take down the dams now in order to, this is the thing, to bring back the salmon. Well, now, if one wanted to examine it, go all the way back to the conspiracy idea, one would take the idea of the removal of dams in North America specifically and see if there were some discussion of it somewhere, maybe in the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, Council for Foreign Relations, or in Tavistock literature, Tavistock being the overall head of the octopus, if you will, on mind control in London. And one would indeed find that, yes, hey, as part of Agenda 21 and the rewilding of the United States or the North American continent, they indeed want to remove all the dams out in the West. And they've been writing about this since the late 50s. Well, now they're starting to do it. And what's the validation and justification for removing these dams? Bear in mind the dams do multiple things around here. They not only provide electricity for much of the Western region, but they also provide flood control to some extent. Although I grant you that they alter the natural flow of the environment and they are an unnatural process, I'm against the idea of going on in and blowing up and removing these giant concrete mountains that are perfectly functioning electrical, hydroelectric devices while we've got them, especially since we don't have any replacement. And so basically they're going to beggar us of this resource. They're going to take away our resource of hydroelectric power out here on the justification of saving the rivers for the fishes. And the local indigenous tribes are backing this effort in many cases. And they've been sold this bill of goods, and they're part of the Agenda 21 unwittingly and unwillingly, because I'm pretty sure most of them don't understand how they're being maneuvered. And they're being maneuvered by monetary interest. But there's been a lot of shift that direction. So it's a question of the governmental numbers that were used for immigration I don't buy, because I see governmental numbers now being used to manipulate social policies in a what will have a huge negative effect on future generations for basically lies.
And speaking of withholding data points, before we go on, would you say that there are data points that you did not include in the report that you didn't even tell us that you weren't including? And if so, would the immediate delivery of a certain amount of seasonal pumpkin pie get those data points out of you now?
No. No. The only reason I don't deliver those is for individuals' security, or so as not to litter a path with obstacles. I mean, it's realistic, and I've actually had occurrences where I've talked about things and made it more difficult for individuals later on, and if I just simply kept my mouth shut, they still would have surfaced. I still would have seen the results of that, and it would not have taken anything away from the report. So I'm very careful now, especially since we've got a larger mom now. I have to stop and explain that. Mom is model of model space. So I've got basically a giant three-dimensional imaginary virtual aquarium filled with lots of little bright pixels instead of fishes. There's a little subset of that represents maybe 1% of all of it that is an insert that I can haul out and examine. And within that insert are millions of records of data that also encompass individuals within what I call the woo-woo world. That is to say, the contemporaries that I may speak about because they have some impact on the general movement of the social order. Let's take David Icke, for instance. So David Icke has been around for years and years and years, since the 90s. He's been a public presenter of information in one form or another, and it's okay for me to talk about him, but I have him within my model of model space, and I would be able to forecast certain elements that may come up about him that I may or may not decide to speak about if I thought it would cause him problems. Make sense?
It does. And when I think of David Icke, I think of the whole concept of first they laugh at you, then they listen, and then, you know, the whole story.
Exactly, right.
And some of the reports stated the curse of the riches will mark the areas where the greatest changes will come. This is not hard to understand, as those who are higher up have a greater distance to fall when the house of cards tumbles. Is the lexicon suggesting the previously stated social backlash against what is arguably the richest nation of them all, the Catholic Church, the Vatican? For nobody has a higher proverbial distance to fall than those so adorned in stolen gold and lives as the Vatican does?
I wouldn't put it that way, because that may allow certain people that might have a prejudice or an emotional attachment to religion to think that religion is going to be more prominent than the other components. So let's examine the triumvirate, the trinity of the world we actually live in. Okay, you'll notice the trinity is repeated everywhere in our society. In all the advertising, you'll see everything is a reference to three. We see the trinity referenced in religion. We see the trinity in our succession of, you know, president, vice president.
Are you talking about London, Vatican, and Washington?
Correct. Exactly. But I'm talking about the Trinity in the sense of religion, money, and military as well. So the idea that the Vatican is going to take a particular prominence, I do not support. Rather, our data suggests a world much more like a gritty version of say, Blade Runner or something. thing where we have a failing system with only two legs left from the stool, okay, and one of the legs is already rotten and crumbling. And so what's going to happen, in our opinion here, from the data viewpoint, would be that the Vatican will be the first thing to go. It'll be the first thing that's sacrificed. It'll be the first thing that falls. And they'll use all different kinds of sponges, mental sponges, to try and sop up as much of the energy that used to go into the religion as they could, as they can, to pull it all in. But they'll be content, that is to say, they, the powers that be, being directed by the octopus that is Tavistock, will be content to allow the religion's component to fall away and rot away on its own, because it has served its purpose at this, up to this point, and it's going to get in the way as they go forward. Now, the other two legs of the stool, the economic and the military, the economic is already rotten and crumbling, and they are aware of that, and they also don't care to a certain extent about that, as they are in the process of shifting resources out of the social order and into the military. So what's going to occur is a world in which the rich will basically withdraw, or not withdraw, because you'll still see them, but they'll be separate. They'll be isolated from the rest of us. They're going to have their own court system, which they do now. They're never tried. They're never brought to justice. They have their own transportation system that you and I can never be part of, and if you intrude on it, you'll be killed. Like, if you get in the way of a limousine in the future, you know, they'll just shoot you because you're a potential terrorist, and because they can't be tried, they won't even be brought to court, that kind of an issue. Mm-hmm. So if they decide they want your land, they'll just issue a writ to somebody, and they'll come and take your property. That's that kind of a deal. So there will be an entirely feudalistic viewpoint from the rich onto the rest of us, with the military acting as a buffer to try and keep down the ever-present rumbling. And then it's just a question of how bad the rumbling is in any given area, and it's going to be a perpetual battle as things degrade generally around us.
And for the listeners, Cliff continues to use the term Tavistock. I highly suggest, if you're not familiar with Tavistock, go and look for Dr. John Coleman's work. There's an interview that we did a few months ago that took me about a year to do, because he was honestly almost scared to do it. He doesn't want to talk about it publicly anymore. But one thing that he did say, Cliff, that took us off guard, is that he does not believe in chemtrails. What's your take on that?
Well, his belief system is neither here nor there. You know, that's kind of like, that's fine.
he thinks it's just bunk. He just thinks it's a conspiracy theory.
Okay, then that's fine. He has every right to think that. I dispute it myself. I've seen the largest gathering of scientists on the planet discuss geoengineering, specifically relating to chemtrails and why they're trying to use them to plug all the holes in the ozone layer against our decreasing atmosphere. So his level of ignorance about the biomechanics of the planet and the physics of the planet we're on is merely that, his level of ignorance. I'm not going to say that his other information is bogus, because he does not favor my view on chemtrails.
Oh, absolutely. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I'm just saying, somebody who's so in touch with what's behind the scenes, to say that it's just a conspiracy theory is just, it didn't just feel right to me.
But you could, you've got to understand something. I think everybody does. We need to examine the sheer level of everything that's out there. And so let's examine all the people in a woo-woo world. Because I look at datum and data at a particular level, in the millions and millions and millions of records, I have a tendency to have a very high view. And I can see many, many different kinds in interactions that others may not. The data sets that other researchers run across has a tendency to focus their viewpoint, may lead them into viewpoints that we wouldn't necessarily share, simply because their mind is occupied by the intense level of detail that they have about their particular subject that we don't. That's something that I'm particularly ignorant of. I can find details rapidly, but I try not to, because my viewpoint is generally of a higher level. Make sense?
Yep.
So in this sense, I'm not faulting him for thinking that. I have all kinds of things I know to be false or I question, and I hold them in place until it's brought up and I have to actually go and do the work of finding out, well, is this true or not?
And speaking of chemtrails, I just returned from vacation a few weeks ago, and in Mexico, the beaches of Mexico completely covered with chemtrails. And the first thing that came to mind was, Why don't I contact the respective environmental agencies in Mexico and see what they have to say? How are you allowing these planes to fly over your quote-unquote sovereign country? Because I know how expensive flying a plane is, and I doubt that the Mexican government is flying that Mexican planes over their country. What's your take on that?
I doubt, again, I would agree. I doubt it's Mexican. I don't think it's any point to try and protest at this stage. We used to think that the chemtrails were of a particular nefarious, you know, mind control, this kind of thing. I'm now of the opinion that the recent geoengineering conference and the one before that have led us to a clear understanding of what they think is going on. The issue is the following. Our atmosphere has developed a series of holes that they used to refer to as the ozone hole. The ozone hole in Antarctica is giant now. The ozone hole in the Arctic is very large. The space in the atmosphere in between is now more Swiss cheese-like than it used to be with its former density. The supposition has been from the 70s that this event, that this continuation of a process that would lead to, by 2070, the release of all the methane in the oceans, which would kill all life that wasn't methane breathers, meaning us and everything we know. Although many plants might survive and morph into it. The supposition that everybody's operating on within the geoengineering world, which again, they're operating on government numbers, which might be bogus, but they're all operating on the assumption that the ozone thinning, Swiss cheese fashion, has been so rapid that chemtrails have had to spread in a pattern that had earlier been anticipated to take close to 50 years, and they've had to do it in less than 5. If you read into the literature further, you see that their fear is the release of the blue methane ice in the Arctic and the North Pacific, something I also fear. This is huge levels of methane in both areas. And we now have an instance, just as an aside, let's discuss local press here in the Pacific Northwest, where we find the Coast Guard in Canada and in Alaska is saying, oops, they weren't paying any attention to the Arctic, and there's all kinds of traffic up there with people doing stuff they weren't aware of, and they now need a whole lot of money to buy ships to go trucking about and see what everybody's doing. And I happen to know this is quite true, that I've got buddies that have sailed across the Northwest Passage with the diminishing of the ice, popped out, and the Coast Guard says, hey, wait a second, what are you doing here? How'd you get here? You know, because they came out from behind, so to speak. And So there are things that are occurring. Now, the Arctic is less of an issue than the deep Pacific, because the deep Pacific basin has got methane reserves that are much greater than the shallow Arctic Ocean. But again, in their supposition is that it is ultraviolet that will penetrate through these Swiss cheese holes that could be prevented by the chemtrails. Now, that's the language coming out of the geoengineering. If we assume that all the geoengineering guys are honest and doing their job, and this is indeed what they're attempting to do, is to stop a global catastrophe, there's a subset within the geoengineering community that thinks that all the chemtrails are actually speeding up the process and causing all kinds of problems. And then, in fact, the chemtrails are part of the issue that we're facing with what they're calling global climate change, which used to be called global warming. This crowd, the subset of the geoengineering field, thinks that the chemtrails are trapping heat, and the way in which the chemtrails are now being used has a tendency to suggest that this subset of the geoengineering community is correct, because they've altered the pattern of the chemtrail use such that they're now putting the chemtrails over the ocean at night. So the argument that they're attempting to increase the albedo, that is the reflectivity of the planet, is kind of bogus if there's nothing to reflect. And they're saying, well, we're putting it over the Pacific and it'll float across the U.S. during the day and increase the change in albedo. And this, again, is bogus, because the nature of chemtrails is they're most effective within this shorter period of time from the time they're created. And those in the U.S. are actually being created in the localities in which they are that are suffering them. So, again, I'm disputing government numbers, but there is a geoengineering conference that has just recently occurred. There was one in 2010. There was a global geoengineering conference in 2008, I think it was. And if you read the transcripts of those, you see them discussing chemtrails, not in those particular words, but and not with any conspiracy intent, but they are indeed discussing a very dire situation relative to our planet. Again, from my viewpoint, there is so much crap going on. I've got people that are worried about organic food. And so I say to them, okay, yep, that farmer's not spraying pesticide. But in the world of Fukushima and chemtrails, I think pesticides are the lesser of the evils.
True, true. And in a few weeks, I'll have Scott Stevens, former meteorologist, on the show to discuss this. So are you saying that essentially these people who get together, they're implying, look, we can't tell you, but we're having a problem with the ozone layer. We need to do what we need to do to put it back to where it used to be before, but we cannot tell you because the substances, the chemicals, the strontium, the barium, the aluminum that we're using is not good for you, but it's the lesser of two evils. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, only let's take out the word implying and replace it with stating explicitly.
Okay.
They are stating explicitly that that is the case, that they can't discuss it. The reporters are not allowed, but some of the meetings, the abstracts are, and papers are brought out, and they're sort of openly circulated. People within the scientific community, you'll find them in academia, who know about what is going on with the chemtrails and will not speak for fear of personal repercussions that will fall on their heads within so few minutes as to cause all of us to just wonder. Our eyes will bulge at how rapidly these people will be dealt with, because chemtrails is such a huge thing to Tavistock. So let me put it to you this way. I know of an academic that in the United States that had a particular study. The study was very damning. The study looked at a level of metric that the government still continues. Now, let's stop for a second. This is ever so cumbersome to always have to take these little side diversions, but we need to. Let's note, for instance, that the state of Washington no longer examines how much aluminum is in our water. Why? Because there's so much more aluminum than they can ever hope to explain.
Right.
And all academics here and all our health departments know that all our water is so contaminated with aluminum that none of us should ever be drinking it. It's a wonder the fish survive. But they never say anything because they're no longer required to, because that's been removed from all the ecology documents that are around. Now, I happen to know an academic that was looking at a particular metric that the government is still continuing, and I'm not going to mention that metric, but I'll tell you what happened to him. He wrote this report up. The metric is still ongoing. It's very useful to examine if you know where to go out and look at it, and it basically is showing the level of degradation that is occurring within the human individuals relative to the impact of the chemtrails. So if one wanted to, for instance, one could make a metric out of the rate of the rise of Alzheimer's, and because Alzheimer's is known to have an aluminum component to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not what I'm speaking of, but that would be a good metric, and you could say, okay, the rise of Alzheimer's is a real clue that chemtrails exist and they're causing problems. This guy had a metric that was so sure he could do it in parts per thousand relative to his particular statistical metric. He wrote it up into a document. He presented it to his department head. He is a tenured professor, or was a tenured professor. And he was told, he presented it to his department head. Let me say that he was in a field that was related to meteorology. And he presented it to the department head in an afternoon for a review, because he was going to send it to a journal that the academia supports in that field. And the next morning when he got on in, his desk had been packed. There were two individuals there that were there to escort him off campus. There was a substitute teacher to take him over. There were documents saying that his tenure had been revoked for cause, and from very, very horrific cause. In other words, they were threatening him with a rap for a local pedophilic murder that would be committed in his name, so to speak. And he was supposed to just take it and go. And that was it. And he took it and he went. And that's what they do, by the way, is they'll say, okay, you know, to those people that have conscience, that is one of their tricks now that I've run across. They'll say, all right, you know, by the way, here's all the evidence that you committed this murder. And what murder? Well, the one that's going to happen 4 days from now to this little girl unless you leave.
They subvert you or they destroy you.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, the metric, you know, I won't mention that he stumbled across, is still being used, and it's very useful, and others are tumbling to it as well. But that's how rapid it is. So I think maybe more than, you know, any of the other screwinesses that they're trying to divert us with, you know, all the money weirdness and everything, I think that the people at the Tavistock.
Oh, Cliff. Incredible. This is a part that I was suspecting that we were going to be cut off. Let me see if he sees me. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. I had Kathy get off the phone and I had to run back and give it over to her again.
Oh, okay, no problem. I thought that somebody was messing with us.
They were. They took our router down, but we've rerouted here. We're okay.
Okay. I don't know if you heard what I said.
Nope. Didn't have a clue. All of a sudden, click, 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 and then the router was down, and I had to throw cables around and shit. But, sorry about that. But
no problem.
We're good.
When you were saying, the thought of what happened with me and Jay Wetner a few weeks ago was crossing my mind the moment you got disconnected, because what you were saying was important. Let me just read this second part of a question that I asked you a few minutes ago so we can get back on track. The data term illegal to criticize the rich, royal, wealthy, famous is reminiscent of the Dark Ages and cries of witch or the Red Scare in the U.S. to keep the population in line. Will the powers that be use strong arm killing tactics to once again to retain physical dominance and population control like they had to do so in the past? I ask because if ever there was a tipping point for revolution, it is usually violence against the populace, especially visual violence. The powers that be have successfully avoided this by subtle, indirect violence against the populace for decades now, not having to physically bludgeon the Western world into submission when their drugs and propaganda whores do it for them. Just ask Donald Rumsfeld and Rupert Murdoch.
Well, speaking of Murdoch, and actually Rumsfeld to a certain extent, but Murdoch more directly, and going back to Tavistock, no, the next level of the answer to the question is no, they won't actually go to the point where they bring out the clubs. They don't have to. The Tavistock people, through the Council on Foreign Relations, their think tank, have designed just this terribly ingenious system. And so we're going to see something that existed. We're going to see something new based on an old idea. So we're going to see the dirty war or the disappearance war. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see them coming on out into the streets and shooting people. There will be instances where there will be controlled riots. But let's take the two instances here separate. So let me make a quick little note. The controlled riots we'll come back to. Okay, but let's look at what they're going to do with their disappearances. And here's how it'll work. You will write something about in a blog, and they will make a set a numeric value against your name. This numeric value will accumulate much like a credit score across a vast array of inputs. These inputs will come from various different sources, law enforcement, whoever it is that gets a chance to rate you. So you'll be rated as a citizen, or not a citizen, but as a slave. Let's look at it that way. When your rating becomes such that it rises to the level that it becomes troublesome, they will cross-compare your troublesome value and see if your troublesome value is greater than the risk value of action against you. That risk value will be determined by such things as how high a profile you have, who you're connected to, and this kind of thing in a known manner. So, as an instance, the nephew of Biden going off and, you know, causing murders and mayhem somewhere, they won't hassle him too much because his connection value was much higher than his troublesome value. However, if we were to take a hypothetical radio personality and, say, put him in a medium level of the woo-woo world, they've got a not too high level of troublesome value, but maybe they stumble on a story and they've got a very high level of troublesome value relative to this particular story. Let's, you know, say that it's, you know, the reptilian scale that was found at a murder scene or something, and it's actually a reptilian from off planet, and you happen to discover it, or, you know, this hypothetical radio personality discovers it and then talks about it or is going to. What will happen is they won't actually send a SWAT team to that personality. They won't hit their house. But what will happen is depending on how twisted they decide to react, because there's two different levels, a disappearance will occur. It will either be that individual, or it'll be their child or their spouse or their parent. And it'll be in plain sight. It'll happen within a millisecond or a second from, you'll just turn your head and it'll have occurred, and it'll most likely occur in the hands of the gropers. And let's just say that the gropers are these people that they've decided in the minion class are their less than trustworthy levels of psychopaths at one level, but very trustworthy because they can tell the gropers, hey, grab this person the next time they're in a line anywhere in the United States that they go through your hands, and secrete them in a room and let us know. And don't tell anybody you've done it. And hoax up any evidence you need to cover it up. And the gropers will say, sure, glad to. Oh, yeah, this will be great. This will be exciting. And they'll do it. And so you'll be walking along. Next thing you know, you just happen to get into a line where you're getting ready to go through some kind of identity check. And your wife looks away. And the next thing, she looks back and you're gone. And they say, oh, security cameras. And they go to look at security cameras. And there's, oops. Sorry, that one was erased or magnetic anomaly or something. Right. And, you know, it wasn't their fault. You never made it through their security line. But then you've been disappeared. And this is the way it will go. Probably they think they can keep it up for decades. It was at its core the dirty war in that we saw in Latin America. They perfected the techniques under
Pinochet.
Exactly. And usually they would take them and they would put them into helicopters, fly them over and dump them in the ocean and just be done with it. That kind of thing won't occur here because a lot of these people will be harvested in one way or another for various different purposes. And we needn't get into that. So that's one level at which the dirty war will be conducted, and it'll be done at a disappearance level. This is why I was able to apply certain metrics myself that I had determined were in the process of being developed by the Tavistockians and be able to determine that, hey, David Icke is safe. They're not going to pull a Gandhi on him. They're not going to have some quasi-religious nut job come on up and put a bullet in him. And I was able to determine this by applying these various different sorts of values. This gets us back to that mom thing, which is that, you know, within our model of model space, I'm able to determine what can happen to certain people to some extent. And it's been spookily accurate. It's very tedious and a hell of a lot of work, so nobody had better ever ask me to do it because I'll just simply refuse. But it does sometimes guide me in what I'm able to say about individuals. Now, we're getting back to this other half of the question here, the controlled riots. This is what I was warning about people about earlier. The whole uprising in the Arab Spring and everybody in the United States and around the Western world celebrating the great participation of our technology in aiding the uprising and the statement of power to the people and all of that, and they couldn't shut down the internet and they were able to overcome it, blah, 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 right? All of this, these emotions around the technology component of that. But bear in mind that the technology is a weapon. It can point both ways. So if you're in a radical frame of mind, they will use, at some point, they will connect the dots. They'll throw a switch on one of their software systems that tracks who knows who and who talks to who, and they'll decide, okay, time to do a general roundup. And they'll stage controlled riot or protests in which you're given a flash mob kind of a thing over your Twitter account or your phone or whatever, and you respond to it, and it will be an attempt to decide who's on the edge, who can they get out of this network. So say that you're an average North American person, and you have a loose association with the average number of people, that would be about 150 people, that you may have an association with through some level of two levels of difference of activity on your networking. That is to say, you know so-and-so and they know so-and-so. And so they put together the powers that be have this software that magically puts together this little list and connects all these dots. And then they send out the opportunity that they, with the appropriate linguistic triggers, to get those people that are at an emotional edge.
Bait.
To try and get them bait. You got it. To put there, but it's even a little bit trickier than that. What they're actually trying to do is they're trying to see, is there a ring in your thinking that is lacking only a single small little thing to close the ring and cause you to take action? If so, we're going to provide that linguistic trigger to close that ring. The person next to you, maybe they need six linguistic triggers to close their ring, and so they don't react and they go about their business. What they're trying to do is to cull the population, and they'll do it repeatedly. And if you're not aware, you won't notice that, hey, there was a riot or a protest the other day, and where are those 800 people that showed up?
That, to me, I have a few terms that come to mind. NDAA and the Night of the Long Knives. Is that a combination of the two?
It's much more subtle than that, much more insidious. They won't do either. Well, the NDAA was a sop to their legalistic system in which they view universe, but they will never see another Night of the Long Knives the way we have in the past because they now have the sophistication of the technology. They don't have to be that blatant. That is at least their thinking. Now, the minute the technology goes away, or the minute the technology itself becomes suspect in the minds of the individuals, then the circumstances radically change for everyone, including the Tavistockians and the people that pull their strings. And that we're in the process of that occurring now through natural forces. So we can talk about the natural forces, and we have in the sense of the solar luneus. Let's actually imagine the other people besides ourselves have discovered the impact of the sun and the planets upon our vibratory mental states and the atoms and everything within our bodies such that it affects our minds and our thought processes. So this is not a new phenomenon, and we've been aware of this for a long period of time. And if you look at it, you can even go back to the point of time where the first emperor of China had astrologers whose whole job was to see when populations would be most likely to be troublesome. And they would do it based on such things as, you know, lunar and solar passages. Now, that is also affecting the planet that the powers that be, the Tavistockian guys, have to govern. And that's, from their viewpoint, they're sitting on a giant mass of roiling, boiling, emotional uncertainty and chaos that they're trying to manage to their benefit. So they will take advantage of whatever they can, but they are also acutely aware, they're aware of these cycles both when they're advantageous to themselves, and that's why they do all these rituals on these particular dates, but they're also very well aware of the cycles being disadvantageous in the sense of causing general large-scale upheavals against which they may have to battle. So, or direct, misdirect us. So imagine a situation where there is a solar expulsion that causes famine and ecological change that puts a giant mass of populace from Siberia through Mongolia in movement. This has occurred in the past. As it occurred, a particular individual of astute military capability and charismatic nature and a philosophical bent and a good horseman by the name of Temujin. King.
I thought you were going to say Genghis Khan.
That's exactly him. Temujin. That's his real name.
Okay.
We call him Genghis Khan because Khan is the word king, and Genghis actually comes from Qin, so he was actually king of the Chinese. And that's what Genghis Khan means, was king of the Chinese hordes. And so Temujin, who is the military leader that arose at that period of time, took advantage of the fact that there was this movement of the populace, and it was his time for destiny, rule, etc. The universe provided us with a set of influences that had that individual rise at that particular point. This is not accidental, I would suggest, right? And that here was a huge mass of people that were going to be moved by the sun, and I'm sure there were probably hundreds, maybe thousands of Temujins that were ready, produced by universe, to be there then to assume that role. And the one we call Temujin just happened to be the one that made it. That's kind of my viewpoint of things in a generalized sense of terms of the flow of the solar luneus and all the other forces through humanity. Because we're human, I look at it from that viewpoint. Now, so in that respect, here we are at another period of time where the powers that be are we have a world that is much more dense, much more populated, much more complex, where we cannot have the giant flow of humanity in mass movement to work out the solar angst and anxiety and energy that is coming in. And at one level, we can say that that's exactly what occurred with these mass migrations, was that we had a solar expulsions and then the populace went crazy at the same time that its a support structure went crazy and it moved en masse. Now, here we are all feeling the thing. You can even feel it down to the level where it affects your sleep. You get, you know, as we were discussing, you get dry. There are all of those impacts to you. And it's also affecting us en masse through the combined impact of us as individuals. This is essentially how neural networking software reaches or tries to reach artificial intelligence. Neural networking software and their approach to artificial intelligence is the idea that they will encapsulate a little tiny program all in itself with a certain level of ability to do things and then make bazillions of them and see what happens when they all bump into each other. And it's kind of like how humanity works. There are waves that go through us at a large level and we're experiencing those now. Now the Tavistock people, they've got a real issue. They want us to, they want to hurt us all one way. Universe probably doesn't want us to go that way. And I think that the humanity is kind of stuck in the middle of that particular conflict and will be so for a number of years as we sort all this out.
I just think of the time period in which the WebBot cannot see beyond December 2012 and I believe March or May of 2013. Could this be another Carrington event?
Oh, likely is. Very likely is. That's why I'm in the process trying to relocate and get everything settled for just that event. Yes, I'm sure that there's solar expulsions coming. I'm very focused on 2013. The Global Coastal event is undoubtedly a side effect of the solar expulsions. And the way the sun is behaving, we have the maximum pegged for about March, April, May anyway. So that would just tie in too closely. And it always freaks me out when my stuff lines up with astrology or any of the planetary alignments, because we don't take any of that into account. And it's very powerful when that does occur. And sure. So in this sense, we have the situation where the my astro buddies tell me that from December 3rd onward, we have the general shift of planets into what we can think of as the Carrington event alignment. But that there's also a period where on the 18th and 19th, there's this other juxtaposition with the dark, the transition between the center of Milky Way and the dark rift on the other side of it. So that may, that didn't exist in 1859 or in the previous Carrington event, but may add problems to it now. Plus, we've got this big ass comet whizzing on in that will be coming in from a particular angle such that any solar expulsions that occur from end of February through of next year through November of next year will be more Earth-directed than not.
And now, folks, this is why I wanted you to buy the report so that you can follow, because now we have a lot of people who are into buying gold, buying silver, precious metals. This is the U.S. market's data set. In the past, we've seen the incredible power of the press successfully affect the metals markets. Example, May 1st, 2011, when the story of Osama bin Laden's death by the hands of SEAL Team 6 swept the globe, the metals markets plummeted on what some listeners imagine was apparent confidence in the markets and world stabilizing due to some fabricated terrorist death. Or maybe it was a pump and dump, who knows. The question, the lexicon suggests a very significant rise in metals or commodities values. Much later in the data set, the presence of ETs all over the planet becomes too much to deny anymore, which probably would correlate to an increased fear and uncertainty component the general population. At the same time, geophysical changes will be ramping up. Will it be the monkey mind's fear about uncertainty in the ground we walk on be driving the markets haywire, since the markets are just an emotional representation of our confidence levels?
I would agree, as long as we're not talking about the computer-driven trading component of the paper markets. But you're quite right. The issue with this, you can't eat silver and gold, and when space aliens invade, you can't chuck a silver coin at them and expect, I don't think, that it'll cause any problems. It may if there's some kind of an amoeba and they react to the silver. I don't know. But in any event, it's not very likely. So the issue of silver and gold as a storehouse of wealth will still be very appropriate to consider, because it's going to be portable and it's going to be tradable. And there, that's going to be a real key, because part of our data sets suggest that the time, getting back to the Solilunius again and then back old to Genghis Khan, we're at a time where, once again, there's going to be mass levels of planetary movement of individuals. So let's get realistic about it. And you're, you know, you're a friend of mine. I happen to know this guy, okay, and he lives in, I think, North Las Vegas, and his wife works for one of the casinos as a HR rep. And he lost his job maybe 18 months ago. He's over 50. Unlikely he'll get hired again for full-time work. He does occasional stints security. He's really good. He's a martial artist. He teaches at a couple of dojos occasionally. He basically little pickup work to make things go, and he's doing okay, right? Most of his wealth was he was working in the casino management business at the heyday, as they were doing all the building and the construction end, managing large projects, and he made a lot of money, and he stuck a lot of it into silver. Now he's in the situation where he's got a decent house in Vegas that is not threatened. He's not underwater like so many people, because he got in early and bought at a decent rate. But he's in a very strange situation, because where he's at is going to be geographically subjected to forces that, should any of this occur, will make his position untenable. So let's examine them, some of them real quick. If they lose electricity in his area, he's toast because he can't stay there in the summer. Further, his house is so poorly constructed for insulation that if he loses electricity, he can't stay there in the winter because in extreme cold, he wouldn't be able to heat the place. It's too large. He built, you know, he bought into one of those mega mansions, right? He's got like for four, I think he's got, yeah, there's two kids at home, his wife and himself, and they've got six bedrooms and like nearly 8,000 square feet. So it just would be untenable to try and live in under those circumstances. So just electricity alone going for any period of time make it very difficult for him. So his issue is, how does he protect himself in this particular environment? Well, we've got a situation where, getting back to the markets, we now know that if it is digital, Tavistock and those people that are enjoy favor with Tavistock own it. So poor old Gerald Celente, very nice guy. I hear he's a great cook. He's a very rabid defender of everybody's rights. And he can't, he's well known, but he can't get his money back from John Corzine or whoever that MF'd him, right? And so you might get MF'd just at your local bank account. They may just decide, okay, everybody who's got this 401k, we just own them now because we need the money for this. And there will be no recourse to you. So you unfortunately have to resort to what the banks call mattress money. You've got to go gray market. You've got to basically opt out of the system. And really, anymore, we've now reached the point where the data from the web bots in the future, should we be able to make a run? And I'm surprised we were as accurate as we were on this one, because it was just a slavish effort. I mean, I slaved over the code, and then I hate making code changes. You'd have to be a programmer to understand it. If you're not in the maintenance business, you just hate making code changes once you've got it working. It's just because the ideas, the potential for it breaking is just so real, and it's so tedious to debug and stuff. But anyway, in any event, so assuming we could make another run into the future, which might be possible with a lot of code work, but even so, basically, I'm of the opinion that all it's going to do is reinforce where we're at now, and it's pretty much going to be happening so fast that the reports will offer at best anything, maybe a couple of weeks' notice of the things that are going to unfold, because we're at a situation where those individuals that continue to stay within the system will find themselves within a system that is degrading. And that in all respects, the inner level of the complexity between the just-in-time delivery of goods to your local Walmart store, the ability of the internet to process orders, the flow of capital from one country to another, and your ability to eat are all terribly bound up as long as you commit your mind to going and buying from Walmart. Make sense?
It does. And I have to say something that somebody told me a few weeks ago. Somebody said that the next false flag event would be blame on Iran, supposedly hackers hacking into our financial system and taking the digits and wiping people's bank accounts. And then the government would come out and say, look, this is what they did. We have no way of bringing the money back. It was stolen. Now we hit Iran and we rally the people as we did during 9/11. Do you think that's plausible? Thank you very much for listening to the first segment of this interview. We will continue with segment two with our special guest in the Veritas members section. Just go to our website, veritasradio.com, and click on the subscribe link to listen to the rest. We'll take a short intermission, listen to some music, and we'll be right back with segment two in the members section. Enjoy.
When men become truly free. A poem by Colin Ryan. There comes a time in the lives of men when the ruthless and the criminally insane who rule the masses for their own gain make the fatal mistake of enjoying too much their psychopathic entertainment and take too far their need to tread men down by destroying any sense of a secure life and taking away each and every freedom, stealing the last piece of wealth they possess so they cannot even care for their own, stifling their voice with laws and corruption beating them down with rule by force. Where no justice exists for those being played, and there is no direction left for men to turn. When this insane game is taken this far, comes the time when men have nothing left to lose. This is the time when the minds of men are freed. It is the time when man loses his fear of death. This is the time when a man becomes invincible. He becomes free to do whatever he must do, without fear for his life or for his future. He will take control of the destiny of the world, away from the bloodied hands of the soulless. Any action he takes, he will take with a surety that he must do something, for he has no future. So the act he chooses will be all the greater. For when faced with oblivion and with no way out, he will take down as many of his oppressors with him. Gladly die in a selfless act to change the world's future. This day is coming soon, as it always does. The perverse minds of evil always self-destruct, as their addiction to our suffering can never be sated. Exerting control for their paranoia and fear of men. For every good man will take down these brutes. Every free man will give himself up for his brothers. For a man with nothing left becomes fully. He is the most unassailable weapon against evil.
This is Courtney Brown, and you are listening to Veritas.